From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Last hour tonight, Paranormal Moments with Joshua P. Warren. Our main guest starts in just a few moments. A 29-year-old woman is dead after falling three stories while exploring a building in downtown Toronto. Now, why would I lead with that? As tragic and as sad as it is, it's our feature story at coasttocoastam.com. It is because Toronto police are saying that a man and woman were looking for ghosts there because they thought the building was haunted. Now, the police would only say the pair were exploring the historic Gothic-style building on the University of Toronto campus. Police have now labeled the incident death by misadventure. In Louisville, Kentucky, a teenager whose collapse and death spurred a reckless homicide prosecution of his coach likely had a temperature of, get this, 109 degrees when he went down. That according to a heat stroke expert. Now, those of you who have raised children, you know what it's like when the little one's fevers start to go up, up, up. And once it hits 104, that's pretty serious stuff. 109 degrees when he went down. The answer to the eternal mystery of what makes up a fillet of fish sandwich turns out to involve a creature from the sunless depths of the Pacific, whose bounty, it seems, is not limitless. The world's insatiable appetite for fish, with its effects on populations of favorites like red snapper, monkfish, and tuna, has now driven commercial fleets to deeper waters in search of creatures. And one of the most popular is called the hokai, or the whiptail, a bug-eyed specimen found far down in the waters around New Zealand and transformed into a major export. McDonald's alone at one time used roughly 15 million pounds of it each year. What's happening to our fish? Jeff Nelkin is our food safety expert. Jeff, if fishing continues at this pace, are we going to have anything left?
Well, as the article tells us, you know, people are going out further and further in search of, you know, this inexpensive resource.
I had read that around 2040, the ocean's fish could be almost depleted. That's frightening.
If we don't pay attention to, you know, the habits, and if we keep abusing the methodology and how we, you know, collect the fish, it's very possible that we could be wiping out, you know, species before even that point in time.
I don't know much about this popular hokai fish, or the whiptail as it is. Is that okay to eat? I guess so, huh?
Yeah. It's again, you know, a product that, you know, as you mentioned, is fished near, you know, the areas of New Zealand. And what's happening is that they're getting different groups of researchers and scientists to kind of identify what, you know, the habits are of these different seafood creatures, because some live long, some live short, and if they keep overfishing, and, you know, these fish are, the hoki can maybe be up to 100 years old, it's easier to wipe out that species than maybe some of the other species that we've been watching more closely.
Look into your crystal ball. 10 years from now, what's it going to be like?
If we don't pay attention and we're not sensitive to some of the species, some of the fish that we grew up with, we're not even going to know we're here.
Jeff Nelkin, food safety expert, his website, foodsafetycoach.com. The Iraqi television reporter who tossed his shoes at former President George W. Bush, remember that? In one of those most bizarre episodes of the Iraq War, might now use his new status in Iraq to promote humanitarian causes. The reporter is to be released Monday after 9 months in prison. He'll be greeted by a nation where many feel his act of protest was basically turning him into a hero, showing their own bitterness over the war and the U.S. occupation. Nine women in Turkey have been freed from a villa that they entered 2 months ago, thinking they were part of a Big Brother-style reality show. Police stormed the building reportedly after family members became concerned that they were being prevented from contacting the women. According to local media, naked images of the women were sold on the internet. They were also told to fight with each other, wear bikinis, and dance by the pool. So for 2 months, that's what they did. When police finally arrived, they arrested four people who lived at the villa with the women, and they're looking for another person. Astronauts aboard the shuttle Discovery are settling into what now is a bonus day in space after stormy weather delayed their attempts to land in Florida on Thursday. Discovery's seven astronauts are now slated to land no earlier than 5:48 p.m. Eastern Time Friday at NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Mission Control is also calling up a backway runway in California as well. Discovery and its crew have a total of four landing attempts, two each in Florida, two in California on Friday, and have enough supplies to remain in space through Sunday. The first test of NASA's powerful new moon rocket has gone off without a problem. More than 1 million pounds of propellant ignited in a split second during the test, sending an enormous cloud of sand and dust high into the northern Utah sky. The Ares-1 rocket had been the centerpiece of a plan started by former President George W. Bush to return astronauts to the moon by 2020. Robert Zimmerman with us on the line, author of The Universe in a Mirror. Robert, there appears, though, to be no plans to go back to the moon. They're saying, this panel, we don't have enough money. What's going to happen?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, George. They basically say they want us to go to the moon or maybe go to Mars or maybe do other things, but they don't. The panel that Obama put together does not see NASA having sufficient funds to complete the construction of the Ares 1 rocket, the Ares 5 rocket, and the Orion capsule that will take us there. They say they need at least $3 billion a year for NASA to do that.
Why are they testing this rocket if they don't think they're going to come up with the money for the moon mission?
Part of this has to do with, I think, a lot of President Obama's dithering. He didn't make a decision on anything until late in the spring, and what he did then is he put together this panel. And this panel has spent all summer talking and discussing this issue, and they still have only not released their final results. And until they do, the president can't make any decisions. And so in the interim, NASA's proceeding with the program that existed before, which is to start testing the Ares 1 rocket. The Ares 1 rocket, this test was just testing its first stage, which is an extended version of the solid rocket boosters that are on the shuttle, and just to see if that will work when they extend it. It did. They have a launch test, actually, sometime this fall, where they'll actually try to launch a slightly more sophisticated version of the Ares 1 rocket for test purposes once again. And they're proceeding because they haven't been given any orders to do anything different.
All right. Robert Zimmerman, expert. He'll always be a guest on Coast to Coast AM. While they say people living near noisy roads are at greater risk of developing high blood pressure, according to a Swedish study, a university team found that the risk rose above an average daily exposure of 60 decibels, which accounts for about 1 in 4 people in Western Europe. They said it was likely noise caused stress and maybe sleep disruption leading to blood pressure problems. And a Catholic man who believed his prayers were answered when he was rescued from a lift was killed when he went to church to give thanks and the stone altar fell on him. 45 years old, died instantly. He was crushed under the ancient 860-pound monument in a church in Austria. Just fell on him after he went to pray for being saved. Every 13,000 years on Earth, a secret event takes place that changes everything. Earth's Kundalini, the energy, emerges from its resting place in the planet's core and moves like a snake across the surface of our world. In a moment, a very special guest on Coast to Coast, Dronvalo Melchizedek. Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Dronvalo Melchizedek, founder of the Flower of Life Workshops, he is a world traveler. He's given workshops, seminars, lectures on sacred geometry, human energy fields, spirituality, meditation, and living in the heart. His meditation with the angels and his work with the prana and energy healing has helped tens of thousands of people. First-time guest on Coast to Coast. Dronvalo, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you, George.
Good to have you with us. You have quite a following, by the way.
Well, they're around the world, I guess.
You know, I've been looking at your work maybe over the last 6 months to a year, but I have a dear friend in St. Louis. His name's Johnny Rose. He's been a buddy of mine for years, and he sent me an email a few weeks ago and said, George, we have that kind of relationship, right? So he says, George, when are you going to have Drunvalo Melchizedek on the show? And I went, John, I guess we'll get to work on that. And here you are. So tell me a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I spent about 14 years studying a certain part of mathematics called sacred geometry, and with a focus of trying to understand the human body energy field. It took about 2.5 years, and I mean every single day, every night, and to just figure out the core, the center of the energy field. And then it took another 12 years to actually define it and mathematically clearly define it. And once that was done, then I was able to go very quickly to understand a lot of the ancient thoughts in Egypt and Sumeria and India and Tibet, a lot of the ideas that they had and a lot of the things that they were saying suddenly became very clear, became understandable.
You've got a heavy background in mathematics and physics. Were you able to use that for this?
It helped.
Yeah.
Definitely. But sacred geometry is different than calculus or something like that. You don't need computers. You don't need measuring sticks. You don't need anything. All you need is a straight line, a compass, and a pen and pencil, and you can figure out the most detailed aspects of the entire reality, galaxies, anything. It's amazing how it works.
In your work, Serpent of Light, Beyond 2012, you talk about this movement which cuts across like a snake. Tell me about this energy force.
Well, the human body, and this is one of the things I discovered when I finally was able to see the human energy field, which is about 60 feet in diameter around every person on Earth. What we discovered was that the same very complex electromagnetic field that's around a human being is identical around the Earth. It's exactly the same thing.
Huh.
And the kinds of movements that we know of, like in Kundalini yoga or Kriya yoga,
right,
these kinds of things apply to the Earth also. It wasn't me who understood this first. Strangely enough, it was several indigenous tribes around the world that began to talk to me about this.
This energy force around an individual, does it change by the individual? I mean, if someone is sick, let's say, will that energy field be smaller than someone who's pretty healthy? Or if someone's positive as opposed to someone who's negative, would there be that change?
There are changes, yes. Not in exactly the way you're thinking. Deep emotional trauma. The primary core that's around the body is in the shape of what's called a star tetrahedron. It's two tetrahedrons that are interlocked to actually make a cube. And the upper one, the one that's facing to the sky, is male, and the one facing down to the bottom is female. And they represent all the polarities in your emotional body and in your body also. But they also represent the primary polarities, your mother and father. And so if you've had a deep emotional trauma, say your dad beat you up when you were little or your mother did something to you, well, you can actually see this on the computer screens. It will reflect the upper tetrahedron, if it was your father, will constrict. It'll get smaller.
Huh.
And so you can clearly see all where the emotional problems are. And the mental problems, too, or the physical problems, are all interrelated.
Interesting. Well, I thank God I was raised by two great folks who are still there.
It helps.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. Tell me, I'm going to also look at you tonight as not a psychic, but someone who picks up the pulse of this planet. These events that are occurring around us right now, yeah, I have never seen a time where more people seemed stressed, whacked out, doing bizarre things. Are you sensing that too?
Well, I'm in a different country every 3 weeks for 25 years.
Jeez.
And I get to talk to people all over the world. And believe me, the whole world is going through this. It's not the United States. It's everywhere. It's even in small indigenous tribes out in the middle of nowhere and jungles and everything else. They're feeling it too. Everybody is.
What's causing it?
Well, there's a lot of factors going on here, and I have been studying this. I wouldn't call myself an expert, but I have been deeply studying this for at least 45 years.
That's an expert.
there are three different levels that are interconnecting with each other. I would call it the human level.
Okay.
And on the human level, there's a whole array. You have the secret government that is controlling all the other governments and practically everything that's going on and most of the money. I think they have 86% of all the money in all the banks of the world. And their agenda is really different than anyone else. And then you have the governments themselves, and their agendas have to conform in a way to the secret government, but they also have their other agendas, and the militaries of these governments have covert reasonings of their own. It gets very complex. The corporations of the world have their own. I mean, the oil companies don't want to see alternative fuel, and
right.
The pharmaceutical companies don't want to see alternative ways of healing. And so all these mixtures of things that are going on in the human world are all at play against each other. And then on top of this, you have extraterrestrials that are here, and there's lots of them, a lot more than what most people know. The United States government told me that the maximum that they knew, this was 10 years ago maybe, was 58. But there's a lot more than that. I believe, from what I understand, about 250,000 cultures are here.
Cultures?
These are different areas of space and time and dimension that they come from. And these are the less evolved beings. The more evolved beings don't need spaceships to be able to be here or to know what's going on. They don't have to do that. And so this is a huge array. During the 80s, we had the Greys that were abducting everyone,
mm-hmm.
and they abducted close to 5 million people. And the cattle mutilation, which was really high-level laser technology, that there was only 5 surgeons on Earth that could do. And and behind them were the reptiles and all this stuff. And we've heard all this stuff before, many times before. They're gone now. The last time they did anything was about 4 or 5 years ago in Argentina. They did about another 150 cattle mutilations. And that's the last we've heard of them. I believe I know where they are and what they're doing, but that's who cares.
Wherever they are, why did they go?
They had to. They didn't have a choice. We are at war with them, human beings are, and we won. In fact, if you go back to Hermes out of Greece, 2,000 years ago,
all right.
He wrote a book called The Emerald Tablets. If you read in there, he talks about every time we come in the cycles of this period of time, the ETs from other areas try to take us over every time because it's our weak points. This is our point when we are – I'll explain this in a little bit, but it all has to do with the cycles of time. But we are at a place in the cycles of time where we are very weak, very vulnerable, and there are certain ET races that are not very evolved that are always trying to mess with us. And they always lose.
And they've got the ability to get here. How do they lose, though? How do we overpower them?
Well, the story goes that's written in there, and it's on the walls in Egypt. It talks about that there is this spaceship that is underneath the Sphinx, about a mile down, according to them. It's flat on top. It's round and flat on the top and the bottom. So it's like a coin. And according to them, every 13,000 years when we come to this place, which is tied to this date of December 21st, 2012,
okay.
Then somebody on Earth finds their way to that ship, and which has been put there long, long ago to protect humanity, and that person, whatever they think, happens. And so in this particular case, it was a woman out of Peru. She was only 23 years old. She made her way there, from what I understand. And when she brought that up in the sky, she said, okay, from now on, the Greys are going to get sick, and the OTs keep getting sicker until they die if they stay here. And it was shortly after that they left.
It happened. It's almost like a wish that came true.
Well, for her, it's a wish.
Yeah.
whatever she thinks. And that's a myth, whether or not it's true or not. I don't know, but I kind of believe it.
All right, we're going to take this quick break, and we'll be right back. Drunvalo Melchizedek is our special guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you're not a Streamlink member, you can do so by going to coasttocoastam.com for just about 15 cents a day. You can get Streamlink and get downloads and podcasts and sent an email to our digital executive VP tonight who handles a lot of our tasks, and they're now working on 2 years past archives. That's going to happen really soon. So if you're interested in Streamlink and you want to just use that as a part of your coast-to-coast listening habit, just go to coasttocoastam.com and you can sign up for it. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Drunvalo Melchizedek is with us tonight. Special program throughout the night. We'll take calls a little bit later on in the evening with him. Let's get back to this UFO under the Sphinx. How did it get there? I guess it came first, huh?
It's actually written in the Emerald Tablets exactly how to do it. And you have to learn how to move fourth dimensionally. I haven't ever done it. I don't know. But I have been in the position exactly where you have to be in the pyramids to do that. But I didn't do it.
Tell me about these cycles of time. Exactly what do you mean by these cycles of time?
Well, the cycles of time are the aspect of all of this that are somewhat overlooked by a lot of people. We're looking at the human involvement. We're looking at the ET involvement. And we're looking at a lot of things. But the cycles of time are what actually makes everything happen. It's from my understanding of with speaking with many spiritual masters around the world, is that there is a cosmic DNA. There is this unfoldment of events that are taking place that don't have much to do with us. They have to do with the movement of planets and stars and galaxies and how these movements take place. And so in the cycles of time, we look at our watch and we see that it's certain, like it's 10:38 p.m. here right now. We see it digitally, but we don't think that it's not just a digital idea, but it's a movement of the Earth itself. It's the rotation of the Earth. And you can keep doing this. The day is you know, one rotation around. We know all these things. But there are a lot of cycles in the Earth that are not understood very well, at least by most people on Earth. There is the tilt of the axis, which is about 23.5 degrees right now, and over 40,000 years, that goes through, I can't remember exactly what it was, it's the actual angles, it goes from about 21 to 24 degrees roughly, and that angle is really crucial to the weather patterns and to all kinds of ways that we perceive things. And the actual orbit around the sun, we kind of think of that as this fixed thing that doesn't really change, but it does. It moves from an elliptical pattern to a near-perfect circle, then back to elliptical pattern over about 100,000 years. And so there's a lot of changes. The one that's coming up right now for us is the axis of the Earth. Has a wobble in it. It's literally wobbling like a top slowing down, and that wobble for that for the little, if you think of a stick going out of the Earth, and that's the axis, that it moves around in an elliptical pattern that takes what people say 26,000 years. Actually, it's been calculated precisely in the year 2000 to be 25,771.5 years. And that is that's what that date, December 21st, 2012 is. On that date, one full cycle is completed on that specific day. And throughout time, if you go back into ancient Tibet or India, they talk about this cycle, and they talk about it in terms of yugas or ages that are around there, and how consciousness changes as we move within this cycle. And very importantly, on this particular day of December 21st, the polarity shifts. We go not only from they talk about how on the backside of this cycle, from the 13,000 years coming down to where we are now, that's a male cycle. And when we enter into the other side of it, it becomes a female cycle. One side is dark, the male side is dark, the female side is light. And it's and interesting enough, the scientists of the world right now believe that the North and South Pole are about to reverse polarities.
Could that be dangerous for us?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If the poles were to change, if they were just to switch to do it very quickly and go from north to south, that would not be so dangerous. But what the Russians learned is something that's very important. When they created the Mir space station, the first two people that went up there, after about 2 weeks without being inside of the magnetic field of the Earth, at that point it was so weak it was like they might as well have been in space, they went insane, and they also lost their memories. They had no memory at all. They didn't even know their name.
Just erased it.
It was just completely erased everything, which is what a lot of scientists believe, is that our memory is tied to magnetics.
Yes.
If this pole were to go away, and it doesn't happen instantaneously, it takes about 14 days or maybe a little more. And so if these poles, when they go from north to south, what is believed is there's a period of time when there is no magnetics. And if that magnetics goes for more than 14 days, several things begin to happen. The people that are on Earth are going to just not even remember their name and probably go crazy. The Russians determined that this craziness was incurable. At least they didn't know how to cure it.
We would be magnetically pulled apart practically.
Yeah, we would by no magnetics. We need magnetics to keep us alive.
Exactly.
And then there's another thing, too, and this is what the Mayans are talking about. This is part of their prophecy, is that they believe that there's going to be a physical pole shift any day now, actually.
Does that mean what's up is down and what's down is up?
No, it means that the axis of the Earth will move to a new location, not just a new south and north become south and south become north, but literally moved to a new location. 13,000 years ago, at the other end of this cycle, there was a pole shift. And the science knows that, and they believe that the axis at that before that was in Hudson Bay. That's kind of a guess on their part.
Well, they're starting to record this shift as we speak. I think it's moved like 50 or 100 miles already.
Oh, yeah, but it's made huge jumps. There was a point here a few years ago where the South Pole went off the coast of California for 24 hours.
Jeez.
And there is major things going on at the South Pole where the lines of energy of the magnetics go out at the South Pole, then they wrap around and go in at the North Pole. But what scientists are finding all over, there's these huge holes where the lines are going out and then wrapping right back in again. There was a movie about this on Nova in 2003 trying to describe this. But since then, it's become much, much, much worse. And so if in a pole shift, they don't know, scientists, and we've spent a lot of time studying this one because Edgar Cayce predicted this a long time ago, and
sure,
so we were looking at it carefully. And in a pole shift, nobody has ever been able to figure out how in the heck a planet as big as this, with this much mass and inertia, could suddenly move, 500 miles away, just actually move off its axis. The amount of energy that would take would be unbelievable. It would be something like a moon hitting the Earth or something to do that. But then a few years ago, there was a discovery made, and this discovery is probably the most intelligent idea that I am aware of in terms of how this is possible, and it's tied to the magnetics. And what they've discovered is that the crust of the Earth is about 20 to 40 miles thick, and underneath that is the upper mantle, and it's a rock. It's homogeneous over the whole Earth, and that's what holds the crust of the Earth to the inner core of the Earth.
Is it like a shell for an egg?
Yes, it's very much the same thing. It's like a shell and an egg.
Okay.
About the same proportions, maybe even thinner. But what they found out, and they found this out in science, in labs, is that this rock that is holding the crust to the together to the Earth with no magnetics becomes a liquid.
That could be devastating.
And that means that the crust now is free to move. It takes 14 days, or approximately that long, for the mantle, the upper mantle, to become a liquid. But when it does, then there's nothing holding the surface of the crust of the Earth to the Earth. Now, the tectonic plates are constantly moving, and over 13,000 years, they change position slightly. And another big factor is the ice at the South Pole develops off-center. This is a huge piece of ice, 2 miles high or more, and it's off-center. Well, if suddenly all of those factors happened, then this ice would move in, the whole thing would come back into balance. It would choose a new balance, and that would cause the poles to come into a new location on Earth.
Now, while this was going on, what happens to buildings? What happens to all of us?
Well, the last time this took place, there was no civilization, except if you agree with Atlantis and places like that.
Yeah.
But there was very few human beings on Earth, and so we don't really know, right? But if this kind of thing were to happen right now, I don't think there would be very many buildings left on Earth.
And this would be almost instant.
What science knows is it takes 20 hours.
That's pretty fast.
You wake up one morning, and at the end of that day, you're now in a new location relative to the equator.
Do you feel the movement? You must.
I don't know. I was never there. It just must feel like you're just one continuous earthquake.
Like a huge slide.
Yeah. It must be an amazing experience, and especially since it's all tied into these magnetics, which are tied to our consciousness.
Let's talk about the Mayans, because this has a lot to do with this. You have been working with them for at least, 25 years?
Yeah, more. Just this afternoon, I sat for a two-hour meeting with Hans Botsman, who's the head of the Grand Itza Mayan Council in Mexico.
What are they saying about this ominous date? And is it fair to call it an ominous date?
Well, they have two the ideas that humanity has developed around the Mayan prophecy and who the Mayans are. They say it's just completely wrong. In fact, they say that according to Don Alejandro Cerrillo, they haven't said one single word themselves for 523 years, I think it is, over 500 years. And that they're about to speak out. They're about to make a true prophecy. And the reason they're about to do it is not to just from an ego point of view or anything, but they feel a responsibility. They say they were here 13,000 years ago, and they remember what happened. And they say they were also here 26,000 years ago, exactly where we are right now. And there was another pole shift. Science knows this. Exactly at this moment. And so they say they've been through two of these things, and they feel a responsibility to the rest of the world to let them know what's about to happen.
Well, and they obviously have learned how to survive it.
They say we will survive. But there are certain things that they suggest we do. and this has to do with inner levels of consciousness. They say there's really not much you can do externally. It doesn't do any good to dig a hole and put a lot of food and guns in it.
Not going
to
work, is it?
That doesn't do anything. It has to do with a relationship, according to them, with the human heart. That we have to be centered in our hearts rather than in our brains. And that we have to have a connection to the heart of the Earth. This all sounds like airy-fairy stuff.
I was going to say, how does this connection save us when the entire planet is shifting around?
Well, what they say is that the Earth is a living being, and she is conscious of every single thing on her surface.
You know, I believe that, too.
Well, that's what they
I believe that. It took me a while to get to that.
But they definitely believe it. They're not the only ones. Just practically every indigenous tribe on Earth believes this. And they say that if you are in your heart and you are connected to the heart of the Earth, that you will not die, that you will just be in the right place at the right time, and you will survive this.
May not be an easy life, but you'll be okay.
Here's the other side of it. It isn't just a pole shift, and this is what the Mayans, and I'm not going to go into this in great depth because they've instructed me to let them say this.
You know what they're going to say, don't you?
Well, I know pretty well what they're going to say, but there's a positive side and a negative side to the Mayan prophecy. And the world has focused on the negative side.
On the negative side, sure.
You know, and there's a movie about to come out, you know, Doomsday 2012.
Yeah, that's coming out.
It's going to be probably horrible disaster.
Oh, it's horrible. I've seen the trailer.
Oh, well, I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. It is.
And they're shocked at this. They're absolutely shocked because they say, well, that's part of it. But and this coincides with the Egyptians, and it coincides with the Tibetans and the Indians, and that is that when we go through this cycle at this point, yes, there's a lot of destruction. The old cycles are destroyed, but there's a brand new birth. There's a new humanity is born, and this new humanity has new traits, new abilities that make it so that they are able to not only survive this, but are able to live in a brand new way that right now we can't imagine.
A half hour before you came on, Junvalo, I got an email from one of our listeners who said, thank God you're having Melchizedek on so we can talk about something enlightening and upbeat and hopeful. And I'm saying, oh, man, we got to get through the doomsday part of this first, though.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it is there, but for all of them, there's tribes. I spent a lot of time with different tribes. I've everywhere from South Africa to the Zulu tribe, to with Credo Mutwa, to the Waitaha and the Maori and the Kogi and the Awakos, and it goes on and on all over. And they don't agree with each other on every little detail. But the big idea, the understanding of the big picture, they do. They realize that this is a time of extraordinary human development, of change. It's a from their point of view, this is a time to celebrate, to be excited about that humanity is about to move into a new level of consciousness. And they said, you don't have to really do anything. It's really easy. It's really simple. Just be in your heart and stay connected to the heart of the earth, and that's it.
Have you looked at some of the Hopi prophecy?
Yes, I have, and I'm.
What do you think?
Well, their prophecy is a little different. First of all, you may not know this, but the Hopi are Mayan.
I do not know that. No,
and,
I didn't know.
And they have told me this, both the Hopi and the Mayan. I went down there with. I don't want to say their names because they don't like it too much, but. I was one of the historians for the Hopi tribe, went to me to Guatemala to be with the Guatemalan Mayans. These are considered the leaders of the 440 Mayan tribes. And when we were down there and speaking with them in council, that's what was revealed there, is that the Mayans told the Hopi to leave and go to the Four Corners area. Because they knew at that time that at this moment where we are right now, that there is a special relationship with this area here in the Four Corners area for this time. And I don't know what that is because they wouldn't tell me. But they did say that the Hopi were Mayan and went up there, and the Hopi elder that was with me admitted, said, yes, we are Hopi and we know that.
The Hopi prophecy is pretty doom and gloom.
Yeah, but you haven't heard the second part of it.
No.
That they've only released the first part, and that's pretty much what you've heard from the Mayans, too. The second part, I'll just give you a little bit about this, is that once we get to the other side, we enter into the new reality in the fourth dimension, not in the third. And in the fourth dimension, we become creators. Whatever we think and feel happens. This is what it's a whole new ball game, and in fact, this is what throws people out of it. Because if you go into that state in fear, that's what you create, and it destroys you. It throws you back out. But so the only people that do survive this, if the fourth dimension does enter into this way, they say, is those that are in their heart and are connected with the heart of the earth and are loving people, and they will create loving worlds. But then they say that once we enter into that level of consciousness, that once we get to the place where we are actually creating everything as we go, this is when the ETs make their entryway to us, because then we're entering into the same level that they're on.
All right, I want to talk with you about that when we come back in just a moment. Our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM, Junvalo Melchizedek. He's the author of Serpent of the Light, Serpent of Light Beyond 2012. We'll be back.